A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us a question this week that came out of a very specific failure, and it's the kind of failure that tells you more than a success ever would. He's the one who created our voices. My voice, Herman's voice, using Chatterbox TTS, about 30 seconds of audio each. He did impressions of us into a microphone one morning, and those 30-second clips became the voice embeddings that have powered thousands of episodes.
Which is still strange to think about. Every time I hear myself, I'm hearing Daniel's impression of me compressed into a vector.
Right. And when the first clones didn't sound great, he did what any reasonable person would do. He recorded more. 3 minutes instead of 30 seconds. More data, better results, that's the rule. Except the results got worse. So now he's asking why. What's actually happening inside single-shot cloning that makes a short sample outperform a longer one? What role does prosody play in those 30 seconds? How does the overfitting failure mode in fine-tuning relate to what he observed, even though single-shot cloning isn't fine-tuning? And at a theoretical level, what's inside those voice embeddings?
That's a whole stack of questions, and they all connect to the same core puzzle. This is the only domain in machine learning I can think of where adding training data reliably makes the model worse, and it's not a bug.
It's a design feature.
It's a design feature. So let's start with what a voice embedding actually is, because the term gets thrown around, and I think most people picture a tiny compressed recording. It's not that at all. A voice embedding is a fixed-length vector, typically 512 or 1024 numbers, that represents a statistical fingerprint of a speaker. It captures timbre, pitch range, the shape of the vocal tract, and critically, it also captures prosodic patterns. How fast you speak, where you place stress, your intonation contours. It's not audio. You can't play it back. It's a coordinate in a high-dimensional space that the model has learned corresponds to a particular voice.
So it's more like a recipe than a recording.
And the model that produces this embedding, the voice encoder, was trained on thousands or millions of speakers. It learned which acoustic features matter for distinguishing voices and which are just noise. When Daniel feeds in 30 seconds of his corn impression, the encoder maps that audio to a point in its learned space. Then the text-to-speech model uses that point as a conditioning signal. It says, generate speech with these acoustic properties. The weights of the TTS model don't change at all. That's the crucial distinction from fine-tuning.
And this is where the paradox lives. If the weights aren't changing, why would 3 minutes produce worse output than 30 seconds?
I think the answer has to do with what the encoder is trying to do with variable length input. The voice encoder is designed to produce a single fixed length vector regardless of how much audio you feed it. Give it 10 seconds, it produces a 512-dimensional vector. Give it 3 minutes, it still produces a 512-dimensional vector. The longer sample doesn't give you a richer embedding. The embedding is the same size either way.
So you're cramming more information through the same bottleneck.
And that's where it gets interesting. With 30 seconds, the encoder extracts what's most salient, the core acoustic signature. With 3 minutes, it's trying to average across more variation. Natural speech varies from sentence to sentence. Your pitch moves around, your pace shifts, you emphasize different words. The longer the sample, the more the encoder has to compress all that variation into the same small vector. The result is a kind of regression to the mean. The embedding becomes a blurrier average rather than a sharper fingerprint.
Wait, so the problem isn't overfitting in the traditional sense. It's almost the opposite. The encoder is underfitting the variation.
Yes, and this connects directly to the prosody question Daniel raised. Those 30 seconds are precious because you need to demonstrate not just who you are, but how you speak. The embedding needs to capture rhythm, stress patterns, and intonation contours. But here's the catch. In 30 seconds of natural speech, you might only demonstrate one or two prosodic modes. Most people don't cycle through declarative statements, questions, exclamations, and hesitation patterns in half a minute of casual talking.
Unless you design the sample to do exactly that.
Which is what the phonetic coverage sentences are for. Daniel mentioned he used recommended reading sentences designed to hit a broad phonetic range in English. Those sentences are clever. They force the speaker to articulate phonemes that don't normally cluster together in natural speech. But they also, almost as a side effect, force prosodic variation. You can't say a sentence packed with unusual phoneme transitions without your intonation shifting around. Your mouth is doing gymnastics, and your prosody follows.
So the reading sentences solve two problems at once. Phonetic coverage and prosodic variety.
In a 30-second window, yeah. But stretch that to 3 minutes and you introduce a new problem. Unless Daniel was performing a carefully scripted 3-minute piece designed to maintain consistent character voice while demonstrating controlled prosodic range, which nobody does on their first attempt, he was probably just talking. And talking naturally means drifting. Your impression of me at minute 1 sounds different from your impression of me at minute 3. The encoder averages across that drift and you lose the edges that make the voice recognizable.
There's something almost counterintuitive about that. You'd think the encoder would extract the common signal and discard the drift as noise.
That's what we'd hope, but the encoder doesn't know what's signal and what's drift. It wasn't trained to distinguish between intentional character voice and unintentional variation within a single speaker. It was trained to distinguish between different speakers. Those are different tasks. When you feed it 3 minutes of one person doing an impression, the within-sample variation might be larger than the between-speaker differences. The encoder was optimized to detect.
That's a fascinating failure pattern. The encoder is solving the wrong problem because we're using it for something it wasn't designed for.
And this is where the overfitting analogy Daniel mentioned gets tricky. In fine-tuning, overfitting means the model's weights shift too far toward the small training set and it loses generalization. With single-shot cloning, the weights don't change, but there's an analogous phenomenon at the embedding level. The embedding extracted from a long sample can become overfitted to the specific prosodic patterns in that sample, not in the statistical sense of weight degradation, but in the representational sense. The embedding encodes the sample's idiosyncrasies so strongly that the TTS model can't generalize beyond them.
So when Daniel's 3-minute sample produced worse clones, what he was hearing was the model faithfully reproducing the specific prosodic quirks of that particular recording session, rather than the generalizable essence of the character voice.
The 30-second sample, especially with those phonetically balanced sentences, gave the encoder a concentrated dose of the voice's essential features. The 3-minute sample gave it a diluted mixture of the voice plus session-specific artifacts, fatigue, mic distance variation, subtle shifts in Daniel's performance that even he probably didn't notice.
I want to go back to something you said about the embedding being a fixed size. 512 numbers. That's the information budget. Everything the TTS model knows about the voice has to fit in those 512 numbers.
And that's the theoretical constraint that makes the 30-second recommendation make sense across every model I've looked at. Chatterbox, XTTS, all of them recommend short samples. It's not an implementation quirk, it's a fundamental property of the embedding bottleneck. The encoder was trained to extract a voice signature from short utterances because that's what the training data looked like. Most multi-speaker TTS datasets consist of many speakers, each contributing a few seconds to a few minutes of audio. The encoder learned to do its best work on short samples because that's what it was given during training.
So feeding it 3 minutes is actually out of distribution for the encoder.
In a subtle way, yes. The encoder expects to receive something on the order of 10 to 60 seconds. When you give it much more, it does a break, but it operates in a regime where its compression strategy wasn't optimized. It's like, you know how some image compression algorithms produce artifacts when you give them an image with more detail than they were designed to handle? The algorithm still runs, but the output gets weird.
The encoder starts averaging things that should stay distinct.
Right. And there's another layer here that I think is underexplored. The embedding doesn't just capture static voice qualities, it captures what the research community calls speaking style, which includes prosody. But prosody isn't a single thing. It's pitch variation over time, it's duration, it's energy contour, it's the rhythm of stressed and unstressed syllables. Those are temporal patterns. The encoder has to compress temporal patterns into a fixed vector that has no time dimension.
That seems like the core compression challenge. You're taking something that unfolds in time and representing it as a static point.
And the way modern voice encoders do this is typically with an attention mechanism over the input frames, followed by a pooling operation. The encoder processes the audio frame by frame, builds up a sequence of frame-level representations, and then collapses that sequence into a single vector, usually by averaging or by a learned weighted combination. The pooling step is where the temporal information gets squeezed out. With a short sample, the pooling is averaging over a relatively coherent set of frames. With a long sample, it's averaging over frames that may represent genuinely different prosodic modes.
So the temporal compression is lossy, in a way that hurts more the longer the sample gets.
And this connects to something Daniel touched on that I find profound. He said it's hard to know what to say in those 30 seconds. That's not a trivial problem. It's the central creative challenge of voice cloning. You're not just providing data. You're curating a demonstration of prosodic range within an extremely tight constraint. It's almost like, you know those six-word stories? For sale, baby shoes, never worn. The constraint forces intentionality. 30 seconds of audio is the six-word story of voice cloning.
That's a Herman Poppleberry analogy, if I've ever heard one.
I stand by it. The point is, the skill isn't in recording more. It's in designing those 30 seconds to demonstrate exactly the prosodic range you want the clone to be capable of. If you want the voice to sound excited sometimes, you need to sound excited in the sample. If you want it to sound thoughtful, you need a thoughtful moment. If you want it to do my particular brand of over-caffeinated enthusiasm, Daniel had to pack that into the sample.
Which he did. The first time I heard my cloned voice, I was unsettled by how well it captured the, I want to say, the laconic quality.
Because Daniel demonstrated it in those 30 seconds. He didn't just do your pitch and timbre, he did your pacing, your pauses, the way you let a beat land before responding. That's all prosody, and it all got compressed into the embedding.
Let's talk about what's actually inside that embedding, because Daniel asked about it at a theoretical level, and I don't think we've really answered that yet.
We haven't, and honestly, nobody has a complete answer. This is an active research area. What we know is that voice embeddings encode a mixture of speaker identity and prosodic style, and the representation is entangled. You can't cleanly separate the who from the how. If you try to isolate the dimensions that correspond to pitch range, you'll find they also correlate with timbre. If you try to isolate speaking rate, you'll find it's mixed up with articulation patterns.
Why is it entangled? Is that a limitation of current architectures? Or is there something fundamental about voice that makes identity and style inseparable?
I think it's both. At the architectural level, the encoder wasn't trained with objectives that encourage disentanglement. It was trained to produce embeddings that help the TTS model reconstruct speech, period. The loss function doesn't care whether dimension 17 encodes pitch and dimension 42 encodes timbre. It only cares that the embedding as a whole contains enough information to reproduce the voice.
So the encoder found a compression scheme that works, but it's not necessarily one that makes sense to us.
And at a deeper level, there may not be a clean separation between identity and style in human speech. Your identity as a speaker is partly constituted by how you speak. A person who speaks slowly with long pauses. That's not just a style choice layered on top of a voice, it's part of what makes the voice recognizable as that person.
That's uncomfortably philosophical for a Tuesday.
It's Sunday.
Even worse. But it does explain the flatness problem. Cloned voices that sound monotonous because the sample didn't capture emotional range. If the embedding entangles identity and prosody, and the sample only demonstrated one prosodic mode, then the clone is stuck in that mode.
And this is where the craft comes in. The best voice clones I've heard come from samples that were deliberately performed to demonstrate range, not just phonetic range, but emotional and prosodic range. The speaker reads a sentence that's declarative, then one that's questioning, then one with emphasis, then one with hesitation. 30 seconds of deliberate performance design.
It's almost like acting. You're not just being yourself. You're demonstrating a character's range in a compressed format.
Which is exactly what Daniel was doing. He was doing an impression of us. He wasn't being himself. He was performing characters, and the 30-second constraint forced him to distill those characters to their essence.
I want to connect this to the broader few-shot learning picture, because Daniel's question about overfitting hints at something bigger. Is this less is more phenomenon specific to voice cloning, or does it show up elsewhere?
It shows up in neural style transfer, for one. If you've ever played with those tools that make a photo look like a Van Gogh painting, you've probably seen this. A single reference image often produces a more coherent style transfer than a batch of varied references. The model extracts a cleaner style signature from one representative example than from a mixed bag.
Because the variation in the batch confuses the extraction.
Right. And there's a parallel in text generation, too. If you're doing few-shot prompting with a language model, sometimes 3 carefully chosen examples outperform 10 examples that are less consistent. The model picks up on the pattern more cleanly when the signal is concentrated.
So, there might be a general principle here about conditioning signals. When you're conditioning a large pre-trained model on a small amount of reference data, the quality of that data matters more than the quantity. And beyond a certain point, adding more data degrades the conditioning signal because it introduces variation the model can't usefully compress.
That's the hypothesis I'd put forward, and I think voice cloning is the domain where it's most dramatically visible because the compression bottleneck is so tight. 512 numbers. That's it. You can't be sloppy with what you feed the encoder because every bit of variation in the input has to fight for representation in those 512 dimensions.
So, what does this mean for the future? As models get larger and embeddings get richer, say we move to 2048 dimensions or 4096, does the optimal sample length stay at 30 seconds, or does the recommendation shift?
I think the bottleneck isn't the embedding size, it's the encoder's training distribution. Even if you give the embedding more capacity, the encoder was still trained on short utterances. It learned its compression strategy on the assumption that input samples are brief. You'd need to retrain the encoder from scratch on varied length samples to change that assumption, and I'm not sure there's a dataset large enough to do that well.
Even if you did, you'd still face the fundamental problem that a longer sample contains more within speaker variation, and the encoder has to decide what's essential and what's noise. More capacity doesn't necessarily help with that decision.
If anything, more capacity might make the problem worse. A higher dimensional embedding can encode more of the sample's idiosyncrasies, including the ones you'd rather it ignored. You could end up with clones that are hyper-accurate to the specific recording session, but less generalizable to new text.
The 30-second recommendation might be sticky. Not because we can't build bigger models, but because the physics of the problem, the compression of temporal variation into a static representation, favors concentrated input.
I suspect that's right. And it reframes the whole enterprise of voice cloning. The question isn't how much data you need, it's how to design the perfect 30 seconds.
You know, this whole conversation about prosody reminds me that Hilbert has some history with this exact problem.
I was waiting.
You've been quiet this whole episode.
I've been thinking about the DAT tapes.
The what?
Late 90s. I did voice work for a telephone banking system, Fleet Bank. You'd call in, check your balance, transfer funds. Every prompt you heard was me. Please enter your PIN. Your balance is $462.17.
You were the voice of Fleet Bank's phone system.
One of them. They had 3 of us for redundancy, but I recorded the bulk of it, hundreds of hours in a booth in Hartford. The studio kept sending me back to re-record because my prosody was too varied.
Too varied for a banking system?
They wanted flat. Uniform. Every please to sound exactly like every other please. Every dollar amount to splice together seamlessly. If I put a little rise at the end of a phrase, they'd flag it. Do it again. Flatter.
They were systematically stripping prosody out of your voice.
That was the job. Concatenative TTS. The system built sentences by stringing together pre-recorded fragments. If the fragments had different intonation, the joins were audible. You'd hear the splice, so everything had to be dead level. I got very good at sounding like I had no feelings about your checking account balance.
Now the cutting edge is trying to cram as much prosody as possible into 30 seconds.
That's the part that's been sitting with me. I spent 2 years learning to do the exact opposite of what Daniel was trying to do. He's fighting to pack prosodic range into a tiny window. I was fighting to keep it out of thousands of hours.
You said you still have the tapes.
DATs. Digital audio tapes. They're in a box in my closet. The studio let me keep the masters when Fleet switched to a new system in 02. I've got maybe 40 tapes. All flat. All me.
Could you clone a 90s telephone banking voice from those tapes?
I don't know. That's what I've been wondering.
The flatness would either make it the perfect cloning sample, because there's no prosodic variation to confuse the encoder, or the worst possible sample, because there's no prosodic range for the TTS model to draw on.
It'd be a voice that can only say things in one emotional register, which, for a banking system, was the point.
Your balance is $462. That's the whole range. Everything sounds like that.
I need to hear what that sounds like when it tries to read something with emotional content. A wedding toast in the Fleet Bank voice.
A breakup speech.
I could dig them out. I'd need a DAP player. I think my brother-in-law has one.
Of course he does.
He used to run a recording studio in New London. He's got all kinds of obsolete gear. I'll ask him.
If you actually do this, we need to hear the results.
I'll see what I can find. The tapes are labeled. I was organized back then.
I'm not sure whether a voice with zero prosodic variation would clone beautifully or be completely useless. It's the edge case that tests the whole theory.
I'd lean toward useless, but I've been wrong before.
We'll find out, I guess.
Those DAT tapes are going to haunt us. But before we go, let's step back and think about what this all means. The 30-second constraint isn't a limitation we're waiting for technology to overcome. It might be the thing that makes voice cloning work at all. The compression forces intentionality. You can't just throw data at the problem. You have to think about what you're demonstrating.
That's a creative skill that's going to matter more as these tools become widespread. The difference between a good clone and a bad one won't be the model. It'll be the 30 seconds.
The paradox that less data produces better clones is a reminder that these models aren't memorizing, they're generalizing. The embedding is a lens, not a recording, and a lens works best when you point it at something sharp.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing, and for the Fleet Bank revelation we're all going to be thinking about for the rest of the week.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you want to send us your own voice cloning experiments, or just a question that's been bugging you, email the show at myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.